This episode was recorded for my UK Column show. Please support UK Column by going to support.ukcolumn.org.
This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
I was having a discussion with a doctor friend of mine just a few days ago, in fact, and he was saying to me that he does question. So he's quite a normie. So, you know, he's in the system. But he was saying to me that he actually is beginning to find himself questioning some of the stuff that he learnt. And I mean, I think that's a very good place to be. But the kind of stuff that German New Medicine proposes is quite far along the road.
Yeah, I mean, far along the road in that it addresses, it's a causal treatment and not a treatment of symptoms, right? I mean, when I first started on this journey 20 years ago, basically the thing that got me started on it was the fact that I had a close friend who'd been diagnosed with cancer and she couldn't afford a treatment. I funded her treatment, I ensured her compliance, and she died after 3 rounds of chemo, right? And I was devastated. I was shocked, right? I mean, at that point, I was working in venture capital, right? I had no background in conventional or alternative medicine, but now I've spent the last 20 years. When she died, I swore that I would search to the ends of the earth to find a better solution to the problem they call cancer, right? So I spent about a decade studying every modality known to man, nutritional healing and emotional healing and energy healing, and all of anything that had a sense of promise, I studied. And basically what I discovered is that, I mean, we all know that conventional medicine is a system of treating symptoms, right? What we don't realize is that almost every established alternative healing modality is they're also systems of treating symptoms, right? So nutritional healing treats the body and homeopathy treats the environment of the symptoms and emotional healing treats the emotions of the symptoms. And, you know, I mean, they're all systems of symptomatic treatment, Jeremy, right? And I mean, my starting point for this, as I said, I had no background in any form of medicine. In day one of business, we are taught that you can never solve any problem in this world by addressing the symptoms. Because if you address the symptom, then it just comes back again, right? So when I set out on this journey 20 years ago to find a better solution to cancer purely by the trauma that I went through of what I felt like at the time of killing a close friend, because not only did I fund her treatment, I ensured her compliance. She used to message me from hospital saying, "Danny, I don't know what these doctors are doing, but it feels like they're putting poison in my veins, right?" And I'm like, "Come on, Parveen, come on. You know, this is the only solution. You've got to go for it. Push on through." She was dead within a month of going into hospital, right? I mean, it was shocking. So at that point, you know, all I had was my business experience. And in business, you can only solve problems by addressing the cause of the problem. And that's the approach I've taken for the last 20 years. So the only major difference between German New Medicine, that's Dr. Hummer's medical discoveries, who was a medical doctor, a fully trained medical doctor, right, was that he started looking for the cause of the problem instead of just addressing the symptoms. And that's the fundamental difference between conventional medicine and German New Medicine. You know, conventional medicine addresses the symptoms and German New Medicine addresses the cause of the problem. And you can't solve any problem in life by addressing the symptoms. You can only solve problems in life by addressing the cause, right? And that's it. That's a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I learned during the COVID era. If you had this conversation with me, say in 2019, I might have laughed it off.
So we talk about cancer, right? I mean, Let's talk about everything, right? It doesn't matter whether you have a runny nose, a sore throat, a cancer, an arthritis, a Parkinson's, whatever. I mean, the thing you have to keep in mind is that, number one, in our lifetime, nature will never make a single mistake, right? And every change in our biology is triggered by challenges in our external environment. Our body operates exactly the same as your vehicle of your car, right? Our blood pressure goes up, our blood sugar goes up, our thyroxin levels go up, our cortisone, our stress level, our stress hormones go up and down. You know, in a car, the oil pressure goes up and down, the amount of gas that goes into the engine, depending on how much you put your foot on the accelerator, goes up or down. It works exactly the same, Jeremy, right? And every change in our biology is part of a survival biological program that has evolved over a million years of our evolutionary process, right? So let's give some simple examples, right? Let's take something like diabetes, right? Now, what is diabetes? Diabetes is excess sugar in the blood, right? So then you have to look at it biologically. What is excess sugar in the blood for, right? And the way it works is excess sugar in the blood is what we call dry powder, right? You got guns, right? So you know what dry powder is. Dry powder is the...
I can neither answer yes nor no to that question.
Okay. You've been around guns because I've seen it on your show. You've shot a gun, right? So you know what a bullet is,
yes,
right?
Yes, I have shot a gun. Let's say that.
Yes, because I've seen it's on the trailer of your podcast. Right?
It's on the opening on the intro. Yes.
So again, we operate in exactly the same way, right? If I'm preparing to get into a fight, right? What nature does, or if I'm and I say preparing to get into a fight, if I'm preparing to get into an argument. Right. So all of the preparation, the mental arguments are going on, you know, the devil's workshops at play, and I'm preparing. Oh, God, I hate that Jeremy, and I'm going to get in on his podcast and I'm going to take him down and all of those things start. Well, so what happens back in our evolutionary time when we got into a fight? I mean, it was a fight to the death, right? I mean, not like the TikTok fights or the Twitter fights that we have today, right? It was a proper fight, right? So what nature does is it pulls back your insulin, it increases the sugar in your blood so that when you get into the fight, you have the energy ready to deploy into your muscles so you can win the fight, right? So so that's what diabetes is. Diabetes, if you don't want high blood sugar, just stop fighting, stop the mental arguments in your head. And you can, as soon as you stop the mental arguments, you can measure your blood sugar coming down, right? That's all it is, right?
Hold on, Daniel.
It's dry powder.
Hold on. Yes, but hold on. Can you explain the correlation between obesity and diabetes?
Well, it's not necessarily a correlation between. I mean, if you're eating three pizzas, if you eat a piece of chocolate or you eat three pizzas a day, okay, that's going to push sugar into your blood. But then, what happens when you spike your blood sugar from eating? Insulin is immediately released in order to remove that sugar from your blood and store it on your belly. Right, which is why you get fat, right? So the difference between high blood sugar with obesity and high blood sugar with diabetes is that the high blood sugar for diabetes will be constant, because when you're preparing for that fight, the sugar is retained in the blood to give you the chance to win the fight. if I eat a piece of chocolate or I stuff my face with a pizza, basically what will happen is the body will detect excess sugar in the blood that's not required because I'm not ready, I'm not preparing to get into a fight. And then insulin will be released and it will remove the sugar from the blood and it will put it around my hips and my waistline. That's the difference.
Not everybody who's fat has diabetes either.
No, that's right. No, not everybody's diabetes is fat, right? I mean, the people who have diabetes are the ones who sit there preparing to fight arguments with your spouse or your kids or whatever. I mean, that's I get up in the morning and think, oh, okay, I'm going to have a fight with my wife this morning because, you know, she didn't give me a cup of tea in bed or whatever, right? I mean, all that mundane stuff, right? Or she, you know, didn't put the toilet seat up or left the bubbles on the soap or squeezed the toothpaste at the wrong end and all of that stupid stuff, right? I mean, that's what people fight and get angry over, right? And that's what causes the high blood sugar and that's what causes diabetes. All we got to do is say, okay, whether I squeeze the, which end I squeeze the toothpaste actually doesn't really matter because it's all going to come out anyway, right? So who cares?
Mm.
So you just have to, once you start applying your mind to the things you're getting angry about and you think, oh, okay, don't sweat the small stuff, right? Then all of a sudden your blood sugar starts coming down.
I've spent some time going through Rake Homer's work and it's fairly extensive, right? It's not just some guy thumb sucking stuff, you know, to create an interesting theory to get funding. I mean, it's there's a lot of actual science. If you go into German new medicine,
nearly 40 years of research in there, Jeremy, right?
So yeah, and a lot of it for me is very very persuasive, and it does explain so many things. A lot of people, though, have never heard of either him or German New Medicine. So
that's right.
just very quickly, give me the brief summary of what it actually is.
So the easiest way to understand it is to go back to the point as to how he discovered it, right? In 1978, his 19-year-old son, Dirk, was shot and murdered by an Italian crown prince. Okay. Doctor, 2 months after his son Dirk died, Dr. Homer got both testicular cancer that supposedly had metastasized to the stomach. So he had testicular cancer and stomach cancer. Now, he couldn't, this was 2 months after his son just died, right? So 2 months after his son died, he gets an aggressive tumor on his testicle, a reproductive organ. Okay, now he couldn't help. I mean, according to the conventional medicine hypothesis, basically, you're in the cancer lottery, right? If you're unlucky in the testicular cancer lottery, testicular cancer falls out of the sky, or, you know, if you smoke, then it's caused by smoking, everything's caused by smoking. And basically, that's what causes cancer according to conventional medicine. Now, Dr. Homer was a conventional doctor. He was the youngest medical doctor ever to qualify to practice medicine in Germany. Okay, now he couldn't help believing that there was no connection between the fact that he just lost his son and all of a sudden he gets an increase in capacity in his testicle, right? So anyway, what did he do? At that point in time, Jeremy, he was the head of cancer research for a gynecological oncology cancer research center associated with Munich University in Germany. Okay, so he was working with 200 terminally ill female cancer patients with breast cancer and cervical cancer and uterine cancer and all the female cancers, right? So what he started doing is he started interviewing those 200 women to find out whether they had gone through a similar type of emotional trauma to him before they got cancer. And basically, out of 200, 200 had. Right. And then when he started putting those 200 women into different categories of types of cancer, cervical cancer, mammary gland, breast cancer, you know, uterine cancer, etc., what he discovered is that the women in the same category had all suffered from the same type of trauma, right? So, for example, women with ovarian cancer had all gone through some form of profound loss in the same way that he had gone through a profound loss before he got testicular cancer. Okay, so wind forward many years. I mean, he worked directly with over 50,000 cancer patients, right? And back to your previous comment of why nobody's ever heard of this. Basically, he was put in prison many times, had 12 attempts on his life, and they tried to put him in a mental institution 75 times over a 30-year period. Right. In one of the prosecutions where he got a prison sentence, the prosecution subpoenaed 6,500 of his cancer patient records. Right. Now, the vast majority of his patients had already been sent home to die by medical doctors before they came to Dr. Hummer. Right. So the vast majority of his patients were terminally ill. Right. Now, the prosecution in that case called every single one of his 6,500 cancer patients to find out what their current state of health was. And basically over 6,000 or 92% of those terminally ill cancer patients over a 10-year period were not only alive, but they were in full health. Okay, he has a court-audited 92% success rate of healing terminally ill cancer patients who've already been sent home to die by medical doctors. Just let that sink in, right? Now, so the way it works, let's take Dr. Hummer's case, right? His son was shot and murdered. 2 months later, he has a fast-growing tumour on his testicle. Now, what he discovered after many years of research is this is the way it works, right? His son was shot and murdered. Nature basically has increased the size of his testicles. The biological purpose of that process was to increase his sperm and testosterone production so that he had a better chance of getting his wife pregnant so he could replace the child he just lost. Right. And what he discovered, he didn't know this at the time. Right. At the time, he knew nothing. Right. He was a traditional medical doctor. He had his testicle removed and part of his stomach removed. He did not have chemotherapy or radiation, of which I understand the vast majority of doctors don't. But what he later learned is that if he had indeed got his wife pregnant, which was the biological purpose of the program, that what would have happened is that when the purpose of that program is achieved, then basically it switches off like a light switch, and then the extra capacity that was added to help him to get his wife pregnant would then be removed and removed out through the liver, and the testicle would have then gone back to its normal size. So nature works exactly the same as your vehicle, right? If you see a danger ahead on the road, you have two choices. You can either put your foot on the brake and reduce your speed and stop before you get to the danger, or you can put your foot on the accelerator and you can go round the danger so you avoid the danger. Either way, you are reducing your capacity, increasing your capacity in order to address the danger you've seen ahead on the road, right? So what happened? Our body works exactly the same way. When we hit an unexpected challenge in life, what happens is nature will increase our capacity or decrease our capacity depending on the help we need to solve that problem. So in Dr. Hummer's case, nature increased the capacity by increasing the size of his testicles to give him more sperm and testosterone so he had a better chance of getting his wife pregnant so that he could... So if he'd have got her pregnant, then that problem would have been solved and then the testicle would have gone back to his normal size. So his capacity was increased And then it would have been back, reverted back to normal if he had fulfilled that biological program. And that's the way every type of cancer works. You take lung cancer, right? Now, you've got my book on lung cancer, right? If you, we can last for weeks without food and days without water, right? But oxygen, we can only last minutes without oxygen, right? So if I unexpectedly fear I'm going to die, right? Say I'm in a multi-car pileup on a highway, right? And I'm like, oh, okay, this is the end. Or I jump a signal on my bicycle and another car jumps a signal and I hear screeching tires and I think, oh, okay, that's the end. When I have that unexpected fear of dying, what nature does is it increases our capacity to breathe to stop us from dying. So the alveoli, which are the small sacs in the lungs that basically do the exchange between oxygen and carbon dioxide, what happens is they start increasing to stop us from dying, right? Because we can only survive a couple of minutes without oxygen, right? Now, when our lungs start increasing our capacity, a survival response to stop us from dying, basically that is what doctors call lung cancer. And the most common, what is the most common cause of lung cancer? When I go into a hospital and when a doctor says to me, you have cancer, as soon as somebody says to me those words, you have cancer, bomb, I immediately think, God, I'm going to die, I've got cancer, because we've been trained to believe that cancer is this deadly disease that's going to kill us. And it is not. It's just a biological response that's part of a survival biological program.
Listeners get caught up sometimes in unnecessary details. They'll hear one sentence you say and they'll disregard everything. I want to point out that the macro discussion here for me is far more interesting than getting caught up in the minor details that might be, let's say, scientifically incorrect. So, for example, the connection between the mind, the shock, and the response that your body creates for me is absolutely fascinating and in many ways quite convincing.
I mean, the advice I give to everybody, Jeremy, is, and this is the approach I took, right, is you be skeptical, right? You should not believe a word that I'm saying, right? I went through over a decade, and especially when anything that comes to health, you should be hugely skeptical because there is so much noise out there. Every modality I went into, there's like, oh, this is the holy grail of health. You know, this solves all the problems, right? Didn't solve any of the problems, right? They are all just systems of symptomatic treatment. And my best advice is that be skeptical about what everybody says and especially what I say, right? I don't believe anything that anybody tells me, and nor should you, and you should certainly not believe me. But you don't have to believe me, right? You can test this in your own life, right? I mean, it's really quite simple. You know that when you get stressed, right? You know, your face goes red and your ears go red and the heckles go up in the back of your neck and your blood pressure goes up. And you can test the connection between life's challenges and how it changes your biology. It's the easiest thing in the world to test, right? You can do the diabetes test, get a blood sugar monitor at home, right? Sit there. Do your blood sugar, right? And then start thinking about getting into a fight. Start thinking about something that you really hate, somebody that you really want to go after, right? Start planning a fight with them, right? And then 10 minutes after you started planning the fight, measure your blood sugar and see how it's changed, right? I mean, these things are so easy for everybody to test for themselves. You don't have to believe a word I'm saying, and you shouldn't. My breast cancer book was banned in the UK, right? Multiple bestsellers in US and across the world. Global awards for the book. I got 2 global awards for the book and banned in the UK. Why? Because in the UK, there is something called the 1939 Cancer Act, where basically legislatively you can only treat cancer in the UK using chemotherapy, radiation and surgery. And anybody else outside of those modalities essentially gets thrown in prison mostly, right? So that's the nature of the world we live in. What to do?
Yeah, I've got your book on lung cancer being a misdiagnosis. And I guess the obvious question is, why is it a misdiagnosis?
Because it's not a disease, right? I mean, as I mentioned in the example, when you fear dying, your lungs will increase their capacity to stop you dying. Right now, when your lungs increase capacity to stop you dying, a medical doctor will say you've got lung cancer and then start giving you chemo and cutting your lungs out. Right now, the most frequent cause of lung cancer is the prognosis process in medicine, right? Because as soon as you go in, they say, oh, you got cancer. If you don't start taking chemotherapy the day after tomorrow, you'd be dead in a month, right? Bang, then you got fear of death immediately. So then the doctors say, oh, and then the cancer spread from your wrist to your breast to your lung, right? I mean, saying that some cell has broken off a tumour and swum through the bloodstream or the lymphatic system and gone into your lung, I mean, you know, it's like putting an apple seed in a pipe full of human blood and it coming out at the end of the pipe as an orange seed, right? I mean, it's absurd. A breast cell that's designed to produce milk. How can that morph into being a lung cell that does oxygen carbon exchange? It's absurd, right? But that's the nature of the story we've been told, and that we all believe because, you know, it takes a lot of work to get under the. To get under the carpet and really question it and understand really what's going on, which is what I spent the last 20 years doing.
In your book about lung cancer, you speak about the link between the psyche, which is the mind, the brain as the control center, and the affected organ.
That's right. No, it's no different. You know, again, you're sitting in your car. You have your brain, you see a danger ahead on the road. So you see a danger ahead on the road. That's the external environment. It hits your psyche. You think, oh, danger ahead on the road. That message goes to the brain. The brain says, oh, okay, put your foot on the brake, right? So then you put your foot on the brake and then you take evasive action in order to avoid that danger, right? It's no different if you are, you know, in a hospital and you say, oh, you got cancer, you're going to be dead in a month. That the fear, the danger of that medical diagnosis will then hit your psyche. Your psyche will send a message to your brain and your brain will say, oh, God, he's going to die. Increase his capacity to breathe, increase his lung capacity. And then all of a sudden you have lung cancer, according to a medical doctor. It's not lung cancer. It's your biology, your survival biological function responding to a danger in order to help you overcome that danger. And that is basically lung cancer of the alveoli.
And part of the German new medicine, what do you call it? What's it? What's the abbreviation that you use?
So
GHK.
GHK, yeah. I mean, in German, it's called Germanische Heilkunde. In the nearest translation to English is Germanic healing knowledge. Dr. Hummer, it's a bit of a journey, right? It started out as new medicine because Dr. Hummer thought old medicine, new medicine, right? That was the original starting point. But then he was German, right? So he found out new medicine, he couldn't protect that name. So then he called it Germanic new or German new medicine. Right. So then he had a name that he could get intellectual property on. But then as he started his own learning process and understood there is no medicine. Right. I mean, so then what's the point of calling it medicine? So then he changed the name to Germanic Healing Knowledge or Germanische Heilkunde. That was how it progressed.
I was going to say now, so the whole sort of web, the interconnectivity of the way the psyche and the brain, the affected organ work, it's called a biological program, right? And in your book, you talk about there being two phases. What are those two phases?
So two phases. So it's very simple. You face a challenge in life and you go into what Dr. Hummer called going into a conflict, right? You go into the stress phase, right? Something, you know, a burglar jumps through your window, right? So if a burglar jumps through the window, bang, you're immediately, that's it, you're on sort of fight or flight, right? So that's the stress phase, the conflict active phase, right? You chase the burglar around the house or whatever, and you scream at him, get your gun out, or whatever you do, right? And then the burglar jumps out of the window and runs off, and then the conflict is resolved. So then you go into the conflict resolution, which is basically what Dr. Hummer called the healing or repair phase. So what would happen, for example, when a burglar jumps through your window? We have these tubes that go into our lungs called the bronchi, right? What happens, they have a normal capacity. Now, all of a sudden, a burglar jumps through the window. I need more air in my system to be able to chase the burglar, right? So what happens is the tubes in the lungs go from being like, you know, straws to being like hose pipes, right? So I can get more air into my lungs. So I've got more strength to fight the burglar, to get the burglar out of my house or to do whatever I need to do to win the fight with the burglar. Right. So the lungs just immediately go whoomp like this, and they will significantly increase their capacity. Now, that's a short term program to help you win that fight, right? To solve that problem in life, the unexpected conflict, the burglar coming in. Right. Now, after you get the burglar out, you've now got tubes like hose pipes in your lungs. And they have to be then reverted back to being like straws again, right? So in that process, that's what you call the healing or repair phase. They're reverted back to their original capacity. And that's when you get things that doctors diagnose as bronchitis or pneumonia and those type of conditions, basically, which is where the lungs are healing. That's how it works. That's the two phases. The first phase is the conflict. The second phase, after you've resolved the conflict, is the healing and repair phase, where basically the nature reverts back to the original capacity. And 80% of the problems, that's what we call getting sick, right? Because then after I get the burglar out, number one, I'm going to collapse with exhaustion, and then I'm going to start coughing because I'm going to get fluid in my lungs, because healing can, if you cut your finger, every cell in our body can only heal in fluid, right? So if you cut your finger, the first thing it does is it swells up. That's the healing fluids. Now, you get the healing fluids in your lungs as well, right? So the cough is designed to evacuate the healing fluid so you don't drown in them. So the cough is critical to keep you alive whilst your lungs are healing in the fluid. So it heals, evacuates. That's what we call bronchitis, pneumonia, a cough, and that's what we call getting sick. But we can't connect the dots because we don't understand that my lungs increase their capacity when the burglar came in, and now they're reverting back to their capacity once the burglar's gone. And that's when I collapse, and that's when I'm exhausted, and that's when I'm sleeping for days and weeks, and that's when I'm coughing like a chain smoker.
Okay, let me ask you a related question. So I was quite sick a couple of weeks ago, probably the sickest that I've been in years. Okay. Typical flu type respiratory thing, you know, getting cold and hot at night, runny, blocked nose, lots of coughing, phlegm coming up, that kind of thing. And it was quite rough. Now, that came about a day or two after I got back from China. And I was in China, as you probably know, for nearly a month. I was fine throughout the entire trip. Explain to me then, what was the purpose of those symptoms?
So when I mean, I've read a lot of your posts on China. When you went to China, you was in the stress phase, right? You was running around doing all the filming and the recording and the interviews, and you're ding 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 ding. So let's give you an analogy. Imagine you're running a marathon, right? And you run and you run and you run and you run and run. What happens when you get to the end of the finish line of a marathon?
You want to just drop dead.
You collapse, right? And because it's like playing a game of rugby or whatever, right? I mean, when you're on the pitch, you're at 120%, right? You're full on, right? And then you get off the pitch and you get in the changing room after the game and boom, you collapse, right? Same with a marathon. Well, it's exactly the same as going to China. You go to China, you're in that stress phase, you're looking for the story, you're doing the interviews, you're running around, you're flying, you've gone to 20 cities and yada, 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 yada. It's like running a marathon, right? And then you get home, you switch off, you unwind, and then ding, and bang! Same as the end of a marathon, no different. So you'll have a couple of programs running, right? You'll have a territorial conflict that increases the bronchi in the lungs, and you'll also have some, if you had body aches basically are caused by a self-esteem or self-worth conflict, right? So you're going in there to fight to say, oh, it's not all black and white, and you know there's more to China than we're told in the West, and all of those things, right? Where again, when you get home, you've crossed the finish line, you've got the story, you've done the work, and then the body goes into the healing and repair process, which means then the lungs have to be reverted back to normal capacity. The strain and the stress that you put on the body, which forms like a self-worth or a self-esteem conflict, right, which causes all of those aches in the bones and the muscles and stuff like that. So when you get home, basically you resolve those conflicts. So you go from the stress phase, the conflict phase, into the healing and repair phase. And that's when you go and sleep for a week, right? I mean, your body shuts you down. You've got no energy. You can't get out of bed. You know, you're coughing like a chain smoker because your lungs are healing. Your body aches head to toe because, I mean, it's almost the same as like running Comrades, right? I mean, it's the same thing.
I love that you said Comrades. That's a South African marathon that most people don't know about.
Yeah, well, I've done it twice, right? So,
oh, God bless you! What a great man! Do you know, I don't have big enough balls to run that.
In 2010, I got in the Guinness Book of Records running Comrades, right? Because 23,343 people completed Comrades in 2010, got in the Guinness Book of Records, and I was one of them, right? So I did the down run in 2010, I did the up run in 2011, and I thought, okay, yeah, tick that box. I've done that enough now. Two's enough.
Yeah, I mean, for those who don't know, the Comrades Marathon is held every year in South Africa between two cities. It's pretty grueling. It's about 90 kilometers. And one year, because it's an uphill, one year you run up and the next year you run down. So which did you do?
I did both, right? First, in 2010, I did the down run, and 2011, I did the up run.
Which did you prefer? So,
The down run is easier on the day and more painful afterwards.
Because of your knees.
Your quads, right? You've got the brakes on. In a down run, you've got 4,000 feet of inclines and 6,000 feet of descent, right? So in the down run, the last 32 kilometers is downhill. You got the brakes on for 32 kilometers, and I ended up having to walk off the aeroplane backwards because my quads were so destroyed, right? But the up run, the first 32 kilometers, you're running uphill, you're running up a mountain, right? Before you then start running up and down through the mountains, right? So the down run, I mean, I vomited at the top of Fields Hill, right? I mean, it was brutal, yeah. I mean, Both ways is, I mean, it's not called the ultimate human race or nothing, right?
So. I interviewed Bruce Fordyce. Yeah.
I've met him. Yeah.
Yeah. Shame. He got heavily knocked by the COVID shot. He just unfortunately fell for the whole thing. And he got very sick. I must actually find out how he's doing. He was on my show a few years ago, actually. And
I met him when I was in Durban, right? So,
I mean, how's that for an inspirational runner? He's done the Comrades, I think, 29 times.
Yeah, I know. And
I think he said he won it 10 or 11 times.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, in his younger years, I mean, he was running it in whatever, just over 5 hours, right? I mean, which is utterly insane, right? I mean,
I think 5 hours, 26
or
something.
He's a little guy as well, Jeremy, right? Mm. He's not like one of these 6 footers, right? I mean, he's a little guy, right? And he won it 10, 11. I mean, even in his 50s, he was still finishing it in under 7 hours or something, right? Which is utterly insane. Yeah. I mean, but really nice chap. Yeah. I mean, I met him a few times. Yeah. So
back to tick that box. Back to gym and new medicine. A lot of people don't know, but as I said earlier, there is actually quite a lot of scientific thought behind the whole field. Yeah. There's a lot. I mean, if you look it up online, there's a lot. And the five biological laws, for example, are pretty much the foundation. They're in your book also.
Yeah, I cover them. Dr. Hummer's, if I can find his scientific chart, I'll show you it. No, this is the Bible, right? If you look at this, right? I mean, you know, it's insanely detailed, right? So, I mean, if you see the way he's like mapped the brain and stuff, I mean, the work he's done is just absolutely mind blowing, right? I mean, it's all mapped in detail, exactly how the brain functions. And, you know, I mean, it's extraordinary levels of detail. But the problem is, Jeremy, that, I mean, look at the detail of the stuff he's mapped in that, right? I mean, this is like for the brain and, I'm not the sharpest tool in the kit, frankly, right? But I mean, I've got a decent head on my shoulders. I'm not a doctor either, right? I'm just some random venture capital investor who got traumatized by killing a friend with chemotherapy, right? So maybe it was difficult for me to study because I'm not a doctor, right? But I struggled for years to really get my head around it, right? I mean, I'm writing a 500 plus book series, right? This is my flagship book, right? This is the introduction to Dr. Hummer, Terminal Cancers and Misdiagnosis. This is my first published book on breast cancer, and my second one is going to be on lung cancer, right? This is going to be a 500 plus book series, one book on each disease. And the purpose of these books, Jeremy, basically they're designed to be the Forrest Gump of medical books, you know, the dummies series of medical books, so that anybody can access and understand Dr. Hummer's medical discoveries in lay terms, right? So I'm not a doctor. I'm writing them for the average, I'm writing them for a 14 or 16 year old to be able to read, understand, absorb, and action, right? Because Dr. Hummer was a genius, right? But the problem is you've got to be damn near a genius in order to be able to understand it. That's the issue. So I'm trying to take his work and lay a path behind me so that people don't have to struggle to understand these medical discoveries in the same way I did. And that's it. Make them accessible.
Where does germ theory and terrain theory therefore fit in?
Germ theory, I mean, you've been down this rabbit hole, right? No pun intended, but it's complete crock, right? I mean, you have now learned that And this will blow up the comments section, right? But a virus has never been isolated in a human blood sample, right? So
and never shown to cause disease.
And never shown to cause disease, right? So I mean, whatever. have you spoken to Dr. Stefan Lanko, or you've interviewed? I think you've interviewed him, right?
No, Stefan doesn't do interviews anymore.
Right. Okay. So you've studied his work, though, right? I mean, you've seen. I mean, he did an interview with my teacher Ilse Dorelaker, and you know, you can go and look at all of his stuff. If there's anything left,
she was on my show
online, right?
Ilse Dorelaker. She was on my show, that's
right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, she was on your UK show, I think.
Yeah.
so Ilse Dorelaker was my teacher, and she interviewed Dr. Lanko. I mean, what do you say? I mean, and I'm sitting here saying that cancer is not a disease, and you know, a virus has never been isolated in a human blood sample. So you know, I'm immediately in the Looney Tunes basket, right? And I totally get people for thinking that. we've been brainwashed beyond belief, right? If I told you that in our lifetime, nature would never make a single mistake. Never. In our lifetime, it will never go wrong. And you sit there and think, oh, yeah, but what about these people who get sick and they keep getting there? It's like, you have to understand the biological, what's triggered that, what life event has triggered that problem. I mean, let's take something absurd like Down syndrome, right? Or autism, right? These very... You take Down syndrome. Dr. Hummer spent the last 10 years of his life healing children with Down syndrome and getting them back to normal again. What he discovered when he took CT scans, brain CT scans of the babies with Down syndrome, that essentially in the first trimester of pregnancy, Down syndrome is actually caused by what Dr. Hummer called a double hearing conflict, right? Which means that in the first trimester of pregnancy, the mother was exposed to sounds that a fetus found dangerous, like a chainsaw or a domestic drill. These are noises that going to the dentist can trigger Down syndrome in a child. Having somebody cut your hedge with a chainsaw can trigger Down syndrome in a child. When Dr. Hummer discovered the cause of the problem, he developed music therapy that you could use on children. And I've done this. My niece was highly autistic. I gave my brother-in-law Dr. Hummer's healing music. He played it at night whilst his daughter slept. And within 6 months, she pulled out of very deep autism, right? And I've done that with a number of kids. So when you understand, Dr. Hummer had an extraordinary ability, brain CT scans, that was his main diagnostic tool. That technology was only invented in the late 1970s, Jeremy. So that technology only came out just in time for him to use it to make his medical discoveries. I mean, it's... And once you understand the cause of a problem, you know how to address the cause of the problem, and you know how to solve it.
I remember when my wife was pregnant, she didn't want me playing any punk rock or metal around her.
If you'd have done that in the first trimester of pregnancy, you could have ended up with a child with Down syndrome. But people don't know to avoid. What Dr. Hummer described, basically the sound of a chainsaw to a 2-month developing fetus.
To anyone, actually.
To anyone, yeah. But to a 2-month developing fetus, the sound of a chainsaw basically is equivalent of a lion standing behind us and roaring, right? And a lion stands behind you and roars, it immediately puts you into fight or flight. You're not going to turn around and say, oh, is there a lion behind me, right? I mean, you know, that's the equivalent of a chainsaw to a 2-month-old fetus. And what it does, it puts the fetus into fight or flight, and it creates a hearing conflict. Now, what happens is if that happens twice, both of the hearing centers, which is just above the right ears, shut down. And then it retards the development process, which is why they come out with round face and round eyes and all those type of things, because the development process in utero is retarded. If you take something like autism, people think that vaccines are the poison in vaccines are the cause of autism. The poisons in vaccines are not good, right? But they do not cause the autism. What Dr. Hummer learned is that the autism is caused by the vaccination process. Now, today, kids in the US, they get over 70 vaccinations by the time they're 18, right? And by the time they're 5, they've already had like 30 vaccines or something. And in the vaccination process today, what happens is typically it's two arms, two legs, right? So you've got doctors going around, dong, right? Dong, arms and legs of the baby. Now you imagine a six-month-old or a three-month-old baby, yay big, right? Looking at all of these doctors in white coats with needles like this coming at them going, boom! Right, and stabbing them in arms and legs. It's that process. Autism is caused by what Dr. Hummer described. So it affects the voice and it affects the stomach, right? The voice box, the larynx, is affected by either a shock conflict or a speechlessness conflict, right? I can't believe you just let four doctors stab me, right? And the stomach is affected by anger. So when you have what Dr. Hummer called a double conflict of the voice and the stomach, and then you look at autistic children, they either don't speak and they're always angry, they're banging their head against the wall and stuff like that, it puts them into what Dr. Hummer called an autistic constellation, right? But Dr. Hummer's healing music can take kids out of autistic constellation, bang. In a very short period, just by playing the music quietly when a child sleeps at night. It's extraordinary.
You were talking earlier about viruses. So what role then do bacteria and other microbes play?
So it depends. It depends on the part of the body. Now this is going to get complex and I'll try and keep it really simple. We have what Dr. Hummer described as evolutionary germ layers, right? So we didn't sprout out of the ground. We evolved over time, and each germ layer, there are three germ layers split into four separate functions, but each germ layer has its own microbacteria or fungi or bacteria that basically, so every part of our body operates like a menstrual cycle. If you look at a woman during a menstrual cycle, tissue is added during the first part of the menstrual process in order to facilitate a pregnancy, right? Then if she doesn't get pregnant, tissue is removed with bleeding. So the way it works is tissue plus, tissue minus, tissue plus, tissue minus, like that. So if you take the lungs, tissue is added. If I fear dying, tissue will be added to my alveoli, right? That's tissue plus, right? Now, when I no longer fear dying, that extra capacity that's been added needs to be removed. So then it goes tissue minus. So how does it go tissue minus? It goes tissue minus with something called tuberculosis mycobacteria. Tuberculosis mycobacteria is one of the garbage removal agents that remove the extra capacity added in our lungs. Now, medical doctors think that tuberculosis is also a disease, right? It's not. If tissue's been added to the lungs because I feared dying or I feared somebody else would die, it doesn't have to be me, it can be a fear for somebody else dying. Basically, tissue is added. And then when I resolve that, tissue is removed. So it's tissue plus, tissue minus. And in the lungs, that's tuberculosis mycobacteria. Now, this has been terribly misunderstood by conventional medicine because they think the tissue added is lung cancer, the tissue removed, it's tuberculosis, and they're both diseases, and actually neither of them are diseases because nature will never make a single mistake in our lifetime.
For me, the easiest way to think about this actually is not in the city with people, but here in the Kruger National Park, which I love going to. And if you go to the Kruger National Park, you will see, by and large, the whole ecosystem sort of works in symbiosis. It is balanced. The only That's time right. that it becomes unbalanced is when there's human intervention in some way or form, mm. or let's say there's pollution in the water upstream that comes down one of the rivers, or there's lightning and it happens to strike on a piece of glass, which causes a fire. These things cause stress in the animals. But if you remove those things, you've got a pretty balanced system.
I mean, if animals are wired biologically exactly the same as human beings, right? So if you understand Dr. Hummer's medical discoveries, you can treat animals as well as you do humans, right? And I do. I'm an animal lover. I treat dogs and cats and all these sort of things, right? In order to help them solve their cancers, etc. Okay? I mean, if an animal suffered a conflict, say, in utero, and an animal was born deformed with one leg, I mean, what's going to happen to that animal, basically? It's going to die, right? Because it can't survive in the wild with being crippled. So, but that also has a biological purpose, Jeremy, right?
I mean, it becomes food.
Becomes food, and by removing that from the gene pool, basically the gene pool becomes stronger, right? So it becomes food for other animals in the value chain, and basically the gene pool becomes stronger by weak genes being removed. I mean, this is going to sound really weird, but it's exactly the same. That's the biological purpose of suicide, right? Now, I'll quickly explain suicide to you. Right. When Dr. Hummer described suicide, what he called suicide constellation is caused by what he said is a double territorial loss conflict. Now, I put that into English. Right. What is my territory? My job and my wife, for example. Right. So if I lose my job and my wife, then that's a double territory loss for me. My wife territory, my job territory. Right. In nature, I'm only going to lose my territory once, because typically it's a fight to the death, right? If I'm an alpha in a pack and one of the betas challenges me, that's a fight to the death. And if I lose my territory once, I'm dead, right? Because that's the way nature works. We're lucky. We can lose two territories, right? But when I lose two territories, my wife and my job, when I solve one of those so nature in that situation has now concluded that I'm weak because I've lost two lots of territory. And when I solve one of those problems, when I get a new girlfriend or I get a new job, then nature will put me into what's called suicide constellation. Now, in suicide constellation, the desire to kill myself is almost impossible to not kill myself. Right? It's like sliding down a slippery slope full of grease. You just can't get off it. You can't stop it. You're just wrong. You're just going down it, right? And you're going down. So what happens is, if I kill myself, the gene pool has been, the strength of the gene pool has been improved because weak genes have been taken out of the gene pool, right? Now, if I survive that almost impossible journey, and FYI, I've been in suicide constellation and I have survived that journey, right? So I'm not speaking theoretically here, I'm speaking from experience, right? If you manage to not kill yourself and you survive an almost impossible journey of suicide constellation, nature concludes that you are strong, and therefore the gene pool has been improved because strong genes are going back into the gene pool because you survived an impossible journey. But either way, the gene pool gets stronger by either removing weak genes or by putting strong genes back into the gene pool. And that's what suicide constellation. Nature never does anything without a very strong biological purpose to increase the survival of our species.
And it's extraordinary. Animals don't actually commit suicide, if you think about it, unless they are in a stupid situation.
They don't decide
to kill themselves.
They don't need to, right? Because if they lose a territory, for the most part, they're dead, right? if the alpha gets challenged by one of the betas, it's a fight to the death, right? So it's straight. Yeah. If you lose your territory, you're dead. That's what I'm saying in nature. Yeah.
Or if he doesn't die, he doesn't go and commit suicide. He just goes off.
No, he doesn't. But if he survived and he ran away from a territorial challenge, as soon as he leaves, animals, as soon as they leave the pack, they're essentially dead anyway, right? Because an animal on its own in nature, for the most part, with exception, can't survive, right? Because the hyenas will eat it and whatever and...
What you're arguing about microbes actually aligns then with the terrain theory argument that microbes like bacteria and other germs basically assist in the healing process by breaking 100%. Down tissue. They don't actually cause disease, which is precisely what the
doctors
sort of
think.
It's
a bacterial infection or something, right? Mm. Because the bacteria, whether it's a mycobacteria, tuberculosis, or whether it's bacteria in your stomach. I mean, you've got an overgrowth of bacteria, right? The bacteria. Dr. Hummer left a great analogy behind, right? When he's looking at bacteria. So what Dr. Hummer said, if you did a survey of all of the fires in your town, right? All major fires, and you observed that every major fire, there was a firefighter.
Yes. Right? Do you assume that the firefighters started the fire?
Why? Because there's always a firefighter at the fire, right? So therefore, the firefighter must have caused the fire, which is absurd, right? So
it's the same way. It's the same way of thinking of a hyena. You always see a hyena at a carcass.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that the hyena killed the animal, right? In the same way, if every time you go to somebody who has lung cancer, if their body is healing, then they will have tuberculosis mycobacteria in their lungs, right? The tuberculosis bacteria didn't cause the cancer. The fear of dying added caused the cancer. The tissue plus the added capacity to help you breathe to stop you from dying. But once you've gone up to 150% capacity, right, in that moment of difficulty or challenge, you can't have 150% capacity. You need to get it back to normal function. And that's what the bacteria does in the sense to germ theory, the terrain theory, that basically the bacteria removes the extra capacity and reverts it back to normal. So tissues added, tissues removed, tissues added, tissues removed. This system, Jeremy, is extraordinary. You just have to understand it. And it's not easy to understand, obviously.
And no, the sun does not cause skin cancer.
The sun does not cause skin cancer. The skin cancer is caused by. So I had a melanoma on my shoulder, and just for fun, this was caused. So skin cancer. Why would your skin thicken? Ask yourself: in what circumstances would your skin get thicker? Think about it logically. Why would your skin get thicker? So you think this melanoma on my shoulder was caused by being metaphorically stabbed in the back during COVID for not taking the vaccine. Melanoma on the skin gets thicker when you get attacked, and the skin thickens to protect you against the attack. And once that attack, so I had this melanoma on my shoulder, once the attack was over, so then I used my subconscious mind to say, right, okay, subconscious mind, I know this melanoma on my shoulder came from being attacked during COVID for not taking the COVID vaccine. Thank you for that protection. I don't need that protection anymore. So now you can remove the melanoma, and bang, I switched it off and it disappeared within 10 days. I did the same for Mark Atwood. He had a melanoma on his forehead here, and I taught him how to switch that melanoma off, and bang, 2 weeks it is gone. Because you just have to understand why nature does. When you understand why nature does what it does, you can do extraordinary things. I had, Jeremy, in January, I had cancer in my jaw, right? cancer in my jaw basically destroyed my jaw and all my teeth fell out, right? Anyway, I had one surgery, long story, the bridge fell out and I had to go back for, I had surgery with bone graft and all that sort of stuff, right? I had another surgery in January of this year, right? Now, I went through the entire post-surgery recovery with no pain, right? So how did I do that? All of these teeth are all false, right? So these are all the new teeth I've had fit in with bone grafts and all sorts of stuff, right? But the biological purpose of pain, and you can test this for yourself as well, right? The biological purpose of pain is to stop you from using it so it can heal, right? Next time when you cut your finger, when you're in the garden, you're in the kitchen or in the shed or fixing your car or doing whatever, right? If you don't use your finger, you'll have no pain. Okay. Now, as soon as you start putting your fingers to do the dishes or in mow the garden or whatever, right? Then it's like going ba-dum, 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 right? Because what nature's saying is this is broken. Don't use it. Let it heal. And once it heals, you can use it again, right? So the biological purpose of pain is to stop you from using it so that it can heal. Right now, in January, I had this surgery on my jaw. Right now, I had a bone graft and I had industrial size implants put in my jaw. Right, great big huge chunks of metal put in my jaw. Right, before the anaesthetic wore off from the surgery, when I came out of the surgery, I said, "Right, subconscious mind, I know I've just had another surgery with another bone graft and more implants put in my jaw, and that you're going to switch the pain program on. I know the purpose of pain is to stop me from using it so that it has the time, space, and energy to heal. Okay? I have no teeth. I can't use it. At least I have no teeth, right? I can't use it. I will give it the time, space, and energy to heal. Do not switch the pain on." Bang. Went all the way through the healing of this jaw. My face sort of was out here and stuff, right? I did a video on it after the surgery. Right, zero pain. But what I also discovered after my first surgery, I slept for 22 hours a day for 3 weeks after the surgery. Right, the night before the surgery, I did some research. Why is it that whenever the jaw is damaged, that nature puts you into hibernation? And what I discovered with some research into Dr. Hummer's work, Jeremy, is basically when your jaw is damaged, nature assumes you can't eat. If your jaw is broken, nature says you can't eat, right? So what it does is if you can't consume, it stops you from burning by putting you in hibernation, right? Same as a bear in the winter, right? It goes into hibernation because it can't consume in the winter, right? Same thing. After first surgery, it put me in hibernation. So after I came out of the second surgery, I said, subconscious mind, I know that you're going to put me into hibernation because you think my jaw is damaged and you don't want me burning when I can't consume, right? I will be able to consume. I'll have fresh fruit juices. I'll only eat on the good side of my mouth. I won't eat on the bad side of my mouth. I'll be able to consume. I'll have enough energy through soft foods and fresh fruit juices, etc. Do not put me into hibernation. And bang, I'd switch the chronic fatigue off that I experienced after surgeries, right? After the second surgery, I had zero pain. And I had zero chronic fatigue. I mean, I had fever and stuff going up and down and swelling because you can't touch those because they're critical. But I had zero pain and zero chronic fatigue. It's as though nothing had happened. So when you understand why nature does what it does, you can even modify those programs. Switch off pain, bang, like a light switch. It's the cancer on this, I switched it off like a light switch. Sounds mad, right?
How can my audience get more of your madness?
More of my madness. even honestly, it makes I sometimes think it's completely mad, right? Anyway, so my name is Danny Carroll. And if you put a hyphen and .com on the end of it, you'll get to my home base, which is danny-carroll.com. That's where all things me gather. It's the best place.
Danny Carroll, thanks for joining me in the trenches.
Absolute honor, my friend. Always.